Hey, friends, I want to first thank you for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast, The Propaganda Antidote. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Now, you've heard about shrinkflation, right? That's where your candy bar gets smaller, but the price stays the same. Same with the box of cereal. Have you noticed it? It's happening all the time, everywhere now. It's how corporations are trying to hide inflation, but the government insists that inflation is under control or that it's just temporary. But Noble Gold is ahead of the game here. They know that a precious metals IRA will help you hedge these rising prices so that you can retire without worrying. You can keep up with the inflation the folks in Washington are trying so hard to hide. And this month, to thank you and to get your precious metals project off to a flying start, Noble Gold is giving away a free 5-ounce solid silver America the Beautiful bullion coin with every qualifying IRA or 401k rollover. So visit noblegoldinvestments.com or call them directly at 877-646-5347. That's noblegoldinvestments.com.
Our country hung hundreds of doctors, hospital administrators, soldiers, all who were doing the exact same thing our government, our hospitals are doing today in 1946. This really is Nuremberg 2.0, and until we find somebody that's willing to actually prosecute these cases, whether that's an attorney general, as you mentioned, legislatures themselves, traffic courts actually have jurisdiction. The crimes that we're alleging are crimes against humanity, genocide under national law, and that allows for universal jurisdiction. Everybody has jurisdiction to do something about this.
Hey friends, Sean from SGT Report here. Thank you so very, very much for tuning in. That was attorney Todd Callender, and I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Well, if you think crypto assets are the future, I've got good news. My Digital Money's cash account is here. Finally, a crypto cash trading platform with top-notch US-based client service that actually answers the phone when you need help. My Digital Money offers features to help you make a better crypto investment decision that are either not available or that you have to pay for in other platforms. Trigger orders, that's right, automatically sell or buy coins based on your own parameters. Gain loss prompt, know how much you're making or losing in real time. Tax options, you can choose how to sell your cryptos to make your taxes most efficient for your needs. Since MDM offers both crypto IRA and cash trading, there's no need to move from one platform to another for all your crypto investments. You can do all of your crypto investment in one platform and enjoy a customer service quality you can't find elsewhere. The company was founded by our friend Colin Plume from Noble Gold Investments, so it's a company you can trust. Although MDM is offering cryptocurrency investments, their primary product is service. My Digital Money is here for you. Just dial 833-636-2008 or look them up on the web, mydigitalmoney.com. Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning in. It's absolutely fantastic to have you back. I have a very, very important interview here with two friends of truth, one of which is Shannon, whose dad is 74 years old. And unfortunately, he is now in jail. He's not really in jail, but that's what these hospitals have become, friends. He's in the ICU at Pelas Hospital, now known as Northwestern Hospital in the southern suburbs of Chicago. And attorney Todd Callender is trying like hell to get him out, but that is an uphill battle, as you all know. First, let me welcome Shannon. How are you, Shannon?
I'm good. Thank you, Sean.
Glad to have you on. Our thanks to Nicole, our nurse friend, for getting us all in touch. And Todd, who has worked with our good friend Tom Renz on another case, is helping Shannon try to jailbreak her father from the ICU. Todd, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. If you don't mind, I just want to read a paragraph to the audience that Todd sent me because I think it really sums this thing up. He wrote, "I've been doing ICU jailbreaks for many months now. This is a horrific circumstance. And while everyone's been worried about the FEMA death camps, well, they already exist and most people call them hospitals. I only have a 50% chance of getting people out. And in one recent case, the hospital told me they intended to let my client die in their care, no matter what I did or what he did." Tom, I'm coming back to you. Is that actually true? Is it that bad right now? Is the situation that dire that these hospitals are in some cases saying, tough luck, we got them, the patient will die here?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly correct. And in some respects, it's almost worse because they're getting paid once they're a COVID diagnosis. They're getting paid when they put them on a ventilator, and then they're getting paid again when they die. So they are economically rewarded and incentivized for that exact thing to happen. And once they're in the ICU, it's really hard to get them out because there's so many practical things that have to get done in order to move them somewhere else. But yeah, you've got it. That's exactly what happened.
Okay, so in this case, here's the thing. I've said to my audience and in interviews, if this was happening to me, I would read the doctor the Riot Act and tell him that I'm going to personally sue him if my father or mother dies in that care of that hospital because they withhold ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, high flow oxygen, intravenous vitamin C, or anything else that would help. But I guess even when you read the doctor's The Riot Act, you only have a 50% success rate of getting the patient out. Now, why is that?
Exactly
why are these doctors not afraid of being personally sued?
Because they enjoy a waiver and immunity granted to them by the Medicare and Medicaid. So if they were to CMS generally, if they accept federal funding, Medicare, Medicaid, CMS, then there is a waiver. It's a COVID-19 emergency declaration blanket waiver for healthcare providers. So until you can prove some level of intent that's effectively criminal, they don't care.
All right, Shannon, why don't you briefly tell us the story here? How did your father, first of all, you must be awake and aware about hospital protocols if now you're hooked up with Tom Callender and you understand that your dad needs to be out of there because remdesivir is not going to help him. That's going to shut his kidneys down. And putting him on a vent is not going to help him. So explain to me, how did your dad end up in this situation?
So my dad was originally diagnosed on November 21st with COVID. And that diagnosis actually was in the ER because my sister thought he had a urinary tract infection. So she wanted to have that ruled out. I was unaware specifically of the hospital's protocol around giving monoclonal antibodies and that he could have received it that day in the ER. I thought he had to be admitted to the hospital in order to receive them. So since he really wasn't showing any signs and symptoms at that point, except for maybe a slight cough, I had all of the supplements and things he needed at home. So we brought him home and they never even offered to give him the Regeneron before he left. And that I find very troubling that they didn't even offer it, considering my father is very high risk as it is, because he has multiple, various ailments. So he would have qualified 100% to get the Regeneron just based off his age of being 74 years old. So as the week went on, he started to decline pretty drastically right after Thanksgiving. And his oxygen levels kept desatting and he was going below 90. So we made a decision on Saturday morning, he had to go in. And when he went in, I went up to the hospital right away. They would not let me go back to the ER to see him. And in fact, the nurse or the ER physician would not come up front to speak to me. So I was literally sitting in the waiting room, speaking to the nurse and the physician on the phone regarding my father, who they were probably maybe, 70 feet away from me. So I had extensive conversation with the ER physician on the phone as I'm sitting in the waiting room to discuss my dad's care and what would be happening. And I told him immediately that he will not be receiving remdesivir. And he went on to question me as to why in my decision on that. And I said, well, doctor, I'm sure you're aware based off of the studies that individuals who go on remdesivir, over 30% of them are developing kidney failure, multi-organ failure, and then they're put on a vent and they die within 5 days. Once they go on a vent, their increased mortality rate shoots up to 80%. And he just kind of pushed me off and was like, well, okay. He didn't want to get into these clinical discussions with me because everything I asked him about clinically, I was challenging him and he did not have an answer for it. So then I started to discuss with him about the NIH guidelines. And I said, there are other medications on the NIH guidelines that you can treat my father with. I said, Decadron would be one of them. So I want him to receive that immediately. And he said, oh, okay, great. Because that's one of the drugs on our protocol. I said, okay, please give that to him immediately. And I said, and the other drug that is listed is ivermectin. And he said, oh, no, no, we can't give that. And I said, why not? I said, it's on the NIH guidelines. I said, you do follow the NIH guidelines, correct? And he wouldn't really answer the question. He just kind of kept telling me he's very, very busy and he had to get off the phone and he didn't have time to talk to me about this. And I said, no, doctor, you know, do you follow the NIH guidelines? Ivermectin is listed on the guidelines. It's the number two drug listed on the guidelines. It is on table 2E. And I can send you the guidelines and give you the page number to refer to. And he said, oh, no, we wouldn't have time to look at that today. So I said, okay, well, there is a third drug on the guidelines as well. I couldn't remember the name of the drug at the time, but I told him I would call him back and give him that name. And then when I did call him back and I gave him the name of the third drug, he said, no, we can't do that one either. He said, the infectious disease doctor is coming down to assess your father. He will, he'll take a look at what you're suggesting and we'll go from there. I said, well, can you give him the monoclonal antibodies? And he said, no, we can't. And I said, why not? He said, that goes against our protocol. I said, why? He said, well, at this point, he's going to be admitted and he's not walking out of the hospital. And therefore, because he's going to be admitted, we can't give it to him. And I said, but your nurse confirmed that you don't know when my father's going to be admitted. It could be a day from now. So while he's still sitting in the ER, we want him to receive the monoclonal antibodies. He said, no, I can't do that. He's like, that's against our protocol. We have to follow protocol and guidelines, he says. I said, well, good. I'm glad that you mentioned the guidelines again, because I wanted to readdress the fact that ivermectin is on the guidelines. And I would like to stress, and as I started to say this, he cut me off and he told me I was threatening him because I was questioning him about the guidelines that the hospital is supposed to be following. And I was threatening him. And he basically told me he did not have time to talk to me and that, this sounded like a threat. And then he hung up the phone on me.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. So here's the thing. What makes my blood boil about these hospital protocols is they don't want family members. They don't even want spouses advocating for the people that are in these jails. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's why you can't see your dad. The same would be true if you were the spouse, right? If this was your husband. Because I know people who have gone through this. Now, let me say something that's very interesting, and then I want to ask Todd a question. Do you guys remember the name Rahm Emanuel?
Yes.
Sure.
So Rahm Emanuel, as part of the Obama administration, famously hails from Chicago, I think, actually. So small world. His brother. Yeah. Okay. His brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, is fond of death panels, and Ezekiel Emanuel has said in the past that people really outlive their usefulness at 75 years old. So it's interesting that your dad's 74 and the NIH protocols are such that, well, there's a lot of good things that they could give him, but they're not going to. And in my view, it's all related to this. These are death panels and now these are FEMA camps. So coming back to Todd, here's something I think is very interesting. While we were waiting for you, Shannon, to join the call, Todd and I were talking and he said he talked to the hospital lawyer at Pelos and they said they won't break with NIH protocols. Now I wonder, Todd, do you have them here somehow legally? Because they are breaking with NIH protocols in terms of some of these helpful drugs that Shannon's suggesting they should give to her dad.
No, that's exactly right. Yes. The short answer is that we can question all of that. And this is their defense. As long as we're following the NIH protocols, we're within the guidelines and we're going to be safe from malpractice, which is what this is really about. Having said that, I understood that they were unwilling to provide ivermectin. That's fine. Some of the doctors, experts in our particular case, said there are 36 separate already approved FDA antiviral drugs that will do more or less the same thing. So I asked the lawyer, I said, would you be willing to provide any antivirals whatsoever? And the answer was no. So no outside consulting doctor allowed. They're not going to break for the NIH protocols. And by the way, no antivirals whatsoever. All of which is very strange to me, given exactly what it was Shannon just said. And she's a professional. Shannon's a pharmacist. Imagine people that don't have that level of expertise on their side.
Well, that's right. And a lot of folks are finding themselves in this exact situation that Shannon's in, and they don't have the knowledge. They don't follow alternative news media, so they're not familiar with people like Dr. Carrie Madej or Karen Kingston or Sherry Tenpenny or anybody else who's blowing the whistle on these protocols. So they have to learn the language from the ground up. But you don't have a lot of time, because what's the average lifespan of these patients that end up in ICU and put on vents? What, a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks?
In my experience, it's 10 days. So the other part of this is, first and foremost, and this will blow your mind, the protocol is, as soon as they have a COVID test come back as being positive, the hospital will put them on midazolam. Have you ever heard of this drug?
Yeah, it slows the breathing, and it makes it really convenient to start shutting everything down as they feed you the remdesivir, right?
That's exactly right. Midazolam is the key ingredient in lethal injection drugs. That's what they put prisoners to death with. And this is what they're providing people out of the box, the first thing that happens. And then they add in the remdesivir. And then on top of that, they starve them. They cut off nutrition. So in my experience, it's about 10 days that people survive. If you don't get them out quick, then they're not coming out.
Well, and maybe Shannon wants to comment on this. It's my understanding, I'm going off memory here, that remdesivir is also an emergency use authorization drug that did not do very well in the trials. Am I right?
No, it didn't. And in fact, Sean, I had a very extensive conversation with one of the attendings at Palos Hospital regarding this. And we talked about the study that they used to get approval here in the United States for the EUA. And it was actually a very small study. It was only 1,000 patients that they looked at for this. And it was a New England Medical Journal study. And the study ultimately concluded that the drug is no better than placebo, so giving nothing at all. So then I further asked him about, are you familiar with the Solidarity study that the World Health Organization did, which is the largest trial to date done on remdesivir? But yet they didn't use that study when they went for the EUA approval in the United States, which I find very interesting. That study even further concluded that remdesivir, there was 4 drugs studied in that trial. There were over 11,000 patients. And to date, I believe up to 5,000 patients have received remdesivir in that trial. And it concluded that not only does remdesivir not decrease mortality, it does not improve survival, it does not prevent a loved one from going on a ventilator, and it does not decrease your stay in the hospital. And I said, are you familiar with this study? And he said, oh, no, I'm not. And I said, I would compel you to go pull that study and to discuss this with your board of clinicians and ask, why are we promoting this medication? And he agreed with me. And he said, I agree. We don't think this is a very good drug. Yes.
Hey, Todd, let me ask you something. So as it relates to just basic human rights and the law, how is it that if this hospital, it's my understanding that this hospital is depriving this man of nutrition and inadequate amounts of fluids? So this is essentially what they do to people in hospice. I know this firsthand from when my father-in-law got pancreatic cancer and he went to hospice and they said he's only got another week to live. Well, it took him 2 weeks to kill him because they deprived him of all water and liquid. So the question is, how long could he have lived if we had fought for him? We didn't know any better. This goes back many years now. Legally speaking, as it pertains to human rights, how could it possibly be that these are protocols that should be universally accepted to deprive people of nutrition and essentially water, hydration?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the most insidious part of this that leads me to believe that this is a planned scenario, and it's been planned for some time, at least since 2006. The Department of Justice put forth a publication called The Role of Law Enforcement in Public Health Emergencies. It's 2006. Effectively, what they've done is gone around the country, and I've run into this firsthand several times. And they combine the hospital in a public health role as being part of law enforcement. So the typical scenario is somebody can't get to their loved one who's in ICU. They're being starved. They're being medically battered because they're giving this person medication that they don't want. Remdesivir is a good example of that. Even if the loved one, has given a medical power of attorney, such as the case of Shannon, so that they can say, what is it they want to have in terms of medicine or not. It doesn't make any difference. A lot of our clients have called local police and said, look, we want a health, safety, and welfare check on our loved one. We haven't seen them for days. We think they're being starved or deprived of fluids. And I would say in most of the cases, what happens is the police either are already at the hospital or they show up and they arrest the person with a medical power of attorney or threaten them with trespass and kick them out. So in my case in Ohio, I was shocked to find out that, you know, when I called the local police chief and I said, look, we want a health, safety, and welfare check. And he refused to do that. This is the chief of police. And I said, well, you know, you've got a complaint here with three felonies. It's got a case number. It's sworn out to in your jurisdiction. And you're not going to investigate that? And he said, no, I'm not going to investigate that. Why? Because the city attorney said that I don't have to investigate. We're not going to investigate it. This is a civil matter. And I was shocked when he said this is a civil matter because there was a sworn complaint of three felonies. It was false imprisonment, medical battery, and kidnapping, medical kidnapping. All of those exist under Ohio's law. And yet you've got law enforcement that wouldn't actually do anything about it. So when you combine the fact that the law enforcement and the hospitals are now one and the same under public emergencies, you have a waiver of rights provided by the CMS waiver under COVID. So long as they can characterize somebody as an emergency under COVID, then there is no repercussions. They can do whatever it is they want, and they are getting economically incentivized to do it. So where do you go?
I have that document right here. Todd sent me this, the CMS waiver, COVID-19 emergency declaration, blanket waivers for healthcare providers. I've got terrible eyesight. What is CMS?
It's the governing organization for, it's the combined Medicare and Medicaid department of the
services.
Okay. So this is a waiver from the federal government that gives blanket amnesty to healthcare providers that roll out this devilish death panel protocol, right? That's what this is.
That's right. That's right. In effect, it waives all of your constitutional and human rights, as long as it relates to COVID.
Okay, well, then this reminds me of what we need to do as it pertains to Albert Bourla and the mRNA vaccine pushers. We need to have international tribunal courts set up because this is an absolute violation of human rights. Because look, when it comes to natural law and our freedoms are God-given. These people do not have the right to take away our freedoms just because they put it in black and white. What if these people in the future say every firstborn son must be aborted? And the healthcare provider that provides that abortion by force will have blanket amnesty. Is that the world we're headed toward? Because that's what this seems like we're headed toward.
It is the only place left, frankly, Sean. And in fact, it's the International Convention on Human Rights. Article 7 in particular states that you cannot use people as lab experiments. And there are rights guaranteed. They're under all of the countries that have signed on to this convention, and there are two others like it. Are supposed to be enacted into local law in every country that's signed on to it. And yet our countries and every other country around the world seems to be waiving all of those provisions. And if you look at the 2005 international health regulations, 196 countries signed on to that. In effect, what happens is upon the declaration of a global health pandemic, all nations cede sovereignty and decision-making to the WHO. So now you have this unified, homogenous response out of the WHO, and that's why you see all the different countries on this planet doing everything exact same way, the same protocols. You would find those in Germany and everywhere else, just what we're finding in the United States. So you would look to international help for this, but the question is, do you find it there? And I know Reiner Fulmick and some other lawyers are trying to get that organized, but you actually have to have consent of the country to have jurisdiction. So the only thing that I see as a possibility in stopping this thing is for people to simply stop going with the program. People themselves have to understand this and say no. There is nobody coming. There's no white horse. There's no savior.
Hey, friends, this is a good time for a quick break and a word about our sponsor. Yeah, it's Noble Gold. Now, you've heard about shrinkflation, right? That's where your candy bar gets smaller, but the price stays the same. Have you noticed it? It's happening all the time everywhere now, but the government insists that inflation is under control or that it's just temporary. But Noble Gold is ahead of the game here. They know that a precious metals IRA will help you hedge these rising prices so that you can retire without worrying. You can keep up with the inflation the folks in Washington are trying so hard to hide. And this month, to thank you and to get your precious metals project off to a flying start, Noble Gold is giving away a free 5-ounce solid silver America the Beautiful bullion coin with every qualifying IRA or 401k rollover. So visit noblegoldinvestments.com or call them directly at 877-646-5347. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. Well, let's think about this, though. And Nicole Landers, our friend, the nurse, is joining us here. Nicole, if you can hear me, welcome. We're right in the middle of this conversation. So let's just flush this out as it pertains to the gift we were given by the founders who set up our republic. And that's what it is. It's not a democracy like the Mockingbird mainstream media whores like to say on the nightly news on a daily basis. It's a republic, if we can keep it. So we have 50 states. We have 50 state attorneys general. Now, in that horrible, I'm sorry that you live there, Chicago, Illinois state, you're not going to get any help from that state AG. But what about state AGs that actually care about liberty and the sovereignty of their citizens? Let's take a look at Florida. What if this was happening in Florida? Would a state AG not have some power to wield against these hospitals? Do the states not have the power to nullify this completely evil garbage coming out of the federal government and the CMS? Todd?
The answer is you couldn't be more right. In fact, you would have seen Governor DeSantis just mentioned, I think it was 2 days ago, that he's turning the National Guard into a state guard. It's going exactly back to the federalism that was envisioned by the Constitution. And this is exactly what has to happen. States' rights, the federal government, does it even exist anymore? I really don't know the answer to that. But the states themselves sovereign. You would have seen Oklahoma also said their National Guard is not going to be forcibly vaxxed. This is exactly how our country was designed, and it's exactly where it has to go back to.
All right. Nicole, welcome. Glad you could hop on. Thanks for helping us set this up. Are you keeping busy trying to help people? I know that you've tried to help Shannon. Is that how Shannon was introduced to Todd? Through you? You're muted.
No, I already knew Todd, and okay. Todd introduced me to Nicole.
Got it. All right. Well, friends, you know that I've had Nicole on in the past. So, Nicole, if you have anything to say about this particular case, weigh in. Todd, so let me ask you this. When you spoke to the hospital lawyer, what was her demeanor? What was her tone? Are these people not at all afraid of what could possibly play out? Because they must know, maybe they don't. Again, I cite my mother-in-law a lot. She got both shots. My mom got both shots. A lot of people just don't know what we know. They don't speak the language. But I think others are culpable. Look, I'm not a doctor and I'm not an attorney, but I figured all of this out. You telling me these doctors don't know that remdesivir shuts down kidneys? If I know it, they don't read the sure studies. They're culpable. They're culpable, man. And I don't think saying, well, I didn't know, is a defense.
You couldn't be more right. That's exactly correct. There is no defense to this. They do know, and even if they don't know, they should know by virtue of their education and training. And certainly in the case of Shannon, who provided them notice, right? She actually said, here's where you find it. So there is no defense to that. What they're relying on is that nothing is going to happen to them by virtue of this combination of law enforcement and public health and the waivers. And you asked me about the demeanor of the lawyer on the other side. I actually feel bad for her. I got the distinct impression that she was genuinely sorry. She was very cordial, and she did exactly what I'd asked her to do, was, can you please check to see if we can get these things done? I got the impression she was actually terrified of this happening, exactly this, that hospital is going to get a bad reputation, and it's just going to be public, and all of a sudden the light is going to shine in. So in many respects, I feel bad for her because she was shaken.
Well, good. You know what? She should be shaken, because everybody who is a part of this, once they learn the truth, they need to disavow it and they need to go public. Now, I'll give you a great example of that. Karen Kingston used to work for Pfizer. She was rising through the ranks, and she does business, or at least until recently did business, with Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and other big pharma companies. But because she is speaking the truth, she's now basically not destitute, but she no longer has any income from those previous sources, because she's blowing the whistle and telling the truth. So I just tell you, let's put these people on blast, because I guess that's how you make the cockroaches scurry. You shine light on them. Pelas Hospital, now known as Northwestern Hospital in the southern suburbs of Chicago. Do I have that right, Shannon?
Yes, it's Palis Hospital, and now they are owned by a Northwestern University Hospital. Northwestern University Hospital is located in the northern part of the downtown Chicago area. Palis is in the southern suburbs of the Chicagoland area.
All right. Well, what's the call to action here, Todd or Shannon or Nicole, as it pertains to dealing with these people? I don't think calling the hospital and just having my listeners bitch at them is going to do any good. But you know what? I would advise people, if you live in the Chicago area, don't send your loved one to that particular hospital if you think they have COVID.
I do have something to say in regard to this, and we've started to have some luck with it. Sheriffs are elected officials. They're responsible to the people that live in their community. And I would really encourage people to go and make a complaint that these are allegations of criminal conduct that a sheriff has an obligation to go and investigate. Reasonable suspicion is enough to launch such an investigation. And that's not a high burden of proof to get to. And if they aren't willing to investigate these cases, vote them out of office. Have somebody run against them that will do that. And what I wanted to say also in relation to this is, if you look at the Nuremberg trials that produced the Nuremberg Code, our country hung hundreds of doctors, hospital administrators, soldiers, all who were doing the exact same thing our government, our hospitals are doing today in 1946. This it really is Nuremberg 2.0. And until we find somebody that's willing to actually prosecute these cases, whether that's an attorney general, as you mentioned, legislatures themselves, traffic courts actually have jurisdiction. The crimes that we're alleging are crimes against humanity, genocide under national law, and that allows for universal jurisdiction. Everybody has jurisdiction to do something about this. We have to use the power of our communities to go and demand that somebody's going to do something about this, as long as they're operating under color of law. And that's the key. We have to use the laws as they exist, or otherwise we're all going to be accused of being terrorists.
Yeah, well said. Before we part ways here, we'll give Shannon the last word if she has anything to say. But Nicole, I think you might have new information regarding a case in Arizona. I'm just reading an email you sent. You want to give us an update?
Hi. Well, I have spent the last 24 hours doing medical rescues out of ERs. And I guess I just hopping in late because I've been so busy keeping these patients from admission. It is critically important that people are aware if you show up at the hospital, it's hard to get you out. Early intervention is key. The very moment you think something's wrong, you need to find a COVID literate doctor or a nurse practitioner, and you've got to get the treatment and stay on the treatment and go at it hard. Get some oxygen in your house in case something goes wrong, because when you show up at those hospital doors, it is a difficult process to get you back out. Our Arizona patient is successfully not going to get trapped. But there's a lot of action on the ground to make that happen. There's an entire network functioning in Arizona that we're able to activate to get oxygen and treatments far more efficiently than most areas in the country. So do your best to find a network in your state, because they are popping up, and get the home treatments in order before you ever get sick. And then reach out to the Truth for Health Foundation. We're happy to help you and guide you and support you to take care of yourselves at home.
Truth for Health Foundation. I did jot down a note here. I forgot to ask Todd. Malpractice lawsuits. I know that these doctors have to have malpractice insurance. They don't like it when you file a malpractice suit against them, because even if it's deemed frivolous, I think their insurance rates still go up. What about filing malpractice lawsuits against these nurses and doctors in the case of maybe what's happening to Shannon's father? Is there anything that could move the needle there, in your view?
I think that's a really good idea. Going back to the light of day, I would highly recommend, where you find medical batteries, medical kidnapping, false imprisonment, file your criminal complaints anyway. Go to the sheriff, go to the police, and even if they don't do anything, you've created a record, right? That record becomes evidence. So that when you do file, whether it's malpractice or a civil suit for tort, you can sue them for the battery and the kidnapping, false imprisonment. Those are tort claims. It doesn't necessarily have to be medical malpractice, which could be hard to prove. But if you swear out a criminal complaint, if the cops didn't do anything about it, at least you have evidence that, at that time you were serious enough to do something about it, and you can pursue other tort claims. And by the way, those kinds of claims look really bad in their medical records, their licensing records. So I think it's a good idea, and you don't need a lawyer to go to small claims to start these things. You don't need a lawyer to go and complain to the medical board. It's just a function about doing something as much as you can.
All right, very good. Shannon, do you have any final words, anything you want to say regarding your dad, or any warnings to those listening who may find themselves in your position if they don't heed these warnings?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I've learned is more about the hospital protocols and how they work in terms of those treatments such as the monoclonal antibodies or the Regeneron, and that people that are high risk, as soon as you have any signs or symptoms, should really go get those or get other treatments that you can, early treatments at home that are going to effectively treat their COVID immediately. I would say that everybody has a right to receive safe and effective treatment to treat this that are on the NIH guidelines. I'm not asking them to treat my father with anything outside the guidelines. It's on the NIH guidelines. And everybody has a right to have their loved ones receive adequate nutrition and fluids. And my father has not received nutrition in 4 days. 4 days. And I had to bring to them about putting him on a TPN on Thursday night. They never even recommended it to me. And I fought them all day on Friday to give him a TPN. They're finally giving him a TPN this afternoon. So he was on a solid 4 days of no nutrition. And based off what Nicole said, he was not on adequate fluids as well, based on her calculations.
And what's a TPN?
Nicole, do you want to answer that one?
So that's a intravenous source of nutrition and lipids. In addition to that, that provides some caloric content and definitely the vitamins and minerals that his body needs to be able to combat the infection in his body. It should never take that amount of time to put someone on TPN. It's a recipe that gets made. It's not that difficult. And I was with Shannon in those advocacies, and the kind of nonsensical information that came back to delay the process is just unreasonable. It's a very easy thing to do to make TPN and at least provide patients a basic level of nutrition and calories and fats in their body.
All right. Well, for those listening, again, just an anecdotal story here, just very briefly. For anybody who doesn't understand how important it is to be hydrated on a daily basis, just don't drink any liquids for 2 days and tell me how you feel. Now, I started this interview by mentioning my father-in-law who had pancreatic cancer. And when he was going to hospice, they told us he had 4 to 7 days to live. 5 days probably when he would die. He lingered for 2 weeks, completely dehydrated because they withheld any hydration from him. And that, I think, ultimately is what killed him. Yes, he had pancreatic cancer, but I tell you what, to withhold hydration and nutrition from people who have COVID in the ICU, that's a death panel protocol. That's an Ezekiel Emanuel death panel protocol. All right, we're going to say our goodbyes. Todd, I don't know how much more business you want. You probably have people reaching out to you left and right, but do you want to shout out how people can contact you?
Yeah, I'm terrified, actually. I'm busy as it is, but the law firm is Disabled Rights Advocates, and it's easy to go there and just take a look. And luckily, I've got some law partners, so if people come and they need help, we'll get to you. Truth for Health Foundation is probably the best way if you're in this circumstance, Nicole and Dr. Vliet and her team. This is what they do. And they could use some help if you have volunteers, by the way, because I do some legal work for them as well.
Okay, excellent. Shannon, I guess I won't put you on blast and ask you to share your Twitter account with us because you're going through something very private here, and I respect that. But if you have any final words, go for it.
I would just say in conclusion that, you know, cancer patients are able to choose their regimens that they want to be treated with. And if they can't choose, their families can choose. So therefore, since I have power of attorney over my father, why can't I choose what medication for him to be treated with, especially when it falls on the guidelines?
Right. No, that's absolutely right. And Nicole, always nice to see you. Thanks for hopping on.
Sorry, I was so late.
No problem. Remind people the website, how they can follow you.
follow us. You can reach us and follow us at truthforhealthfoundation.org.
All right. Very good. Our guests have been Todd Callender, an attorney with a heart, Shannon, a father who is being held in an ICU jail, and Nicole, our friend, the nurse. You guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
All right, friends, I want to thank you all for tuning in. A special thank you to our subscribe stars and our members at sgtreport.tv, where we have a server beyond the reach of Big Brother. You know, we've been kicked off of Twitter, Vimeo, YouTube, Patreon, PayPal. The list goes on. Y'all know the story. And I'll remind you, for real news 24/7, you guys can visit us directly at sgtreport.com. That's the antidote to corporate propaganda and Mockingbird mainstream media lies. Just a quick word about our sponsor, Shrinkflation. Have you noticed it? It's happening all the time, everywhere now. But the government insists that inflation is under control, or that it's just temporary. But Noble Gold is ahead of the game here. They know that a precious metals IRA will help you hedge these rising prices so that you can retire without worrying. You can keep up with the inflation the folks in Washington are trying so hard to hide. And this month, to thank you and to get your precious metals project off to a flying start, Noble Gold is giving away a free 5-ounce solid silver America the Beautiful bullion coin with every qualifying IRA or 401k rollover. So visit noblegoldinvestments.com or call them directly at 877-646-5347. That's noblegoldinvestments.com.
People ask, well, why would someone do this? Why is this happening? And when I read the world patent for Moderna, I didn't just cry. I didn't mourn. I cried for 3 days, and my cries turned into wail. I was wailing out to God because this is evil.
Well, that's it for now, friends. Thank you so very much for tuning in. And I'll remind you every single day for free. Visit us directly at sgtreport.com, the antidote to corporate propaganda. God bless you and your family. Bye-bye.